Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna.
Live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lugeman. Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. And some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who?
Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week. We are live at Latitude 30, across from the Avenues Mall on US 1. Brian Sexton, Tony Boselli, Jeff Lugeman, and John Osher. We are back in Latitude Live again this evening. So if you're coming on down, make your way through the bar and into what they use this room for is comedy. So, John, we're expecting you to come with some good witty banter tonight.
I'll banter. I'm witty.
Occasionally,
and they got costumes out there. Some people look good. Baselli's got his tomato outfit on, and Johnny's got his nerd outfit on. That's comedy.
There you go. Comedy, folks. Three syllables.
That was funny.
The Metro PCS call-in line this evening is the same as it's been since day one. 800-355-NFL1. 355-6351. Obviously, you've got the Twitter feeds at John Osher, at Tony Boselli, and let's recap just a little bit and get your analysis. You watched the tape this week? Did you get a chance to see it?
I did. Watched every play.
All right, and you obviously did, Jeff, for your work for Jaguars All Access. Let's talk quarterback. Was that a game in which he turned a corner? Maybe a soft corner because they didn't win, but a corner.
Well, I hope so, but you know, after the game, you know, my thoughts were, that was a really strong performance by Blaine. But then when you go back and you look at the tape, what's the old saying when you watch game film? It's never as good as you thought, and it's never as bad as you thought. And watching the game film, I thought that there was a lot of opportunities. I don't want to say a lot. There was a few opportunities that Blaine missed. But I think overall, clearly a step in the positive direction. And I think that going into that game, my thought was that, you know what? I don't want to look at the Maurice Jones-Drew injury as a positive because they never are. But at the same time, you know, here's a football team that's been leaning on him for so long, and now they can't. And now it kind of forces their hand a little bit. Maybe that's a good thing. And after that game, I was very pleased with the way Blaine played, and if the drops didn't happen, it could have been a great day.
Not seeing it live, and so – Jeff's exactly right. When you see a game, you have a perception, so you think it's better, and sometimes the film changes that. Going in cold and watching it for the first time, it was the best I've seen Blaine Gabbert play. And the questions of toughness that we've dealt with for so long, I think it's time to put those to bed, and I think we have. I know we have for a while. Mm-hmm. Now, I've never questioned that. Blaine's a tough kid. He's a smart kid. He, as Jeff said, has arm talent. He has all the ability in the world. The question I think a lot of us have had and we have talked about, does Blaine see it? Does he see the field? Does he have the clock and the ability to sit in there?
Instincts.
The it factor, whatever you want to call it, instincts to be able to throw the balls. For watching that game for the first time, I saw Blaine Gabbert. He missed some guys, as Jeff said, but they all miss guys. I mean, Aaron Rodgers missed guys. They all missed
guys.
Game. But what I saw out of Blaine – a number of times he threw into windows where guys were not open. He threw them open. And he threw into windows that you say, oh, gosh, and he stuck it in there. And that's what the good ones do. And so what I saw, forget the ones he missed or whatever, I saw a guy who, for the first time that I've seen, that went through the progression and what he was looking at and then saw things before they happened and put balls in some very – tough places and made some big time, big league throws. And you sat there and watched and said, this is a guy, and to Jeff's point, with no Maurice, and maybe it's a good thing, you don't like anyone getting hurt, but for the progression, you sat there and said, this is a guy playing quarterback right now that you can do, you can have some dang confidence in, and you can line up on Sundays and say, we can win.
There were three throws in that ball game, the one to Mercedes that he dropped, the throw to Justin Blackmon on the sideline where he didn't get his feet in, and then the deep ball to Cecil Shorts. Mm-hmm. Those were three throws that made you go, oh, my, this guy can throw it.
And those were exactly what he was talking about.
With what Tony said, on two of those throws, when he first released him, I went, oh, boy. And then all of a sudden the ball is there and you went, wow. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that you do with great quarterbacks where you wonder where they're throwing the ball and then you realize it's there. Now, Blaine's not a great quarterback yet. We're not saying that. But the things that he did, I thought most impressive to me was the intangible of, in Blaine's career so far, there have been times where he has started well. And then all of a sudden, one thing goes wrong, and the Chicago game is a perfect example of it, and all of a sudden the wheels are off. It's over, and the rest of the game, it looks bad. The other day, that had a chance to happen. He played real well in the first half. They had -1 yard total offense in the third quarter, and what you waited for in that first drive of the fourth quarter was, can he pull this together? Can something happen? And there were two drives in the fourth quarter where they put things together, and you thought they had a chance to score. To me, that's significant because he's talked a little bit this year about having to overcome adversity. I thought he did that maybe for the first time a little bit on Sunday.
I agree with you that that was important. But the two most important things to me, number one is that the quarterback proved to his teammates that he's a tough guy and he's willing to play hurt for him.
Yeah, and to that point, if I hear any fan ever question his toughness again, I mean, don't tweet me, don't call me, don't talk to me. Because it's at this point, it's insulting.
Right, toughness to is any, in the past. To now anyone's, it's can he play?
To anyone's intelligence,
we're talking about.
To anyone's intelligence who watches football and knows Blaine Gabbert, to even ask that question or insinuate that he is not a tough individual is asinine. And don't talk. Just forget. Just stop talking.
Right, now that doesn't answer all the other questions.
No. You can talk about the ability and whether he can be.
That's not it. Yeah,
that's not it.
If he's held back, it won't be because of that.
No, it didn't. But to me, it was the toughness thing, number one. And to John's point, number two, to be able to come back from adversity. Because if special teams at the end of that ball game don't do what they did, if the defense doesn't have an interference call, all of a sudden – we may be looking at another hero situation. I've always known he could come back because, I mean, we had to play in Minnesota. He had to play in Indianapolis. I mean, he didn't have to prove it to me again. But to be able to play with an injury and then to play well, that was big.
Well, and I'll add one more thing because we talked about it, I think it was 2 weeks ago, the internal clock and his ability to wait for things to progress before just going to the checkdown. And he did that. And not only did that, he did what I think a lot of – great players do and great quarterbacks or even good ones, he tried to force things in and stick things in places that were tight. And you have to do that in this league. You have, when you have that type of ability, you have to take chances. And he wasn't looking for the easy way out just to check it down. He was trying to make plays down the field.
And I forgot my second point from earlier, but now I remembered it. There were three plays in that ball game, and I actually took Blaine to the smart board on Jaguars All Access Monday night. Linda's sleeping at the wheel. Thank you. And he escaped the pocket.
Looking downfield when he's running.
Extended the play.
Big, I agree.
And then made a throw. I mean, those were outstanding. The one that was to Mike Thomas, the one to Cecil Shorts on a curl route, and the third one was to Jalen Parmalee there towards the end of the ball game where he just kind of shoveled it forward. Because, those were outstanding.
Because, Jeff, he wasn't running to get away and get down somewhere. He was running trying to buy time looking down the
field.
That's a significant step.
That's huge. Significant to do that. And, you know, Mike Mularkey during the bye week was talking about, I want Blaine Gabbert to run more. And I'm going, what does he mean by running? Because I don't want the quarterback running. We know what happens to quarterbacks that run. They end up like RG3 and they – get a concussion. You know, you want him to throw.
Let's take a break. When we come back, got a question for you about Gabbert and what the Jaguars do with him going forward. Jaguars this week would be nothing without Joe reading our cards. Joe? You need your mic on there, Joe.
All right. Oh, how's that?
There you go, Joe.
That's better. Get a great deal on a Ford F-150 during Truck Month at your local Southern Ford dealers. Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, you can join Blaine Gabbert, captain of the third annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk and 1 mile fun run, November 10th at Everbank Field to support the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation. Register as a team for only $15 per person at mckenziesrun.org.
All right, so Blaine had a career-high 49 attempts, career-high 303 yards also. So the question is...
Would that qualify as throwing it around the yard, by the way?
Yeah, that's where I was going. That's where I was going.
Slinging it.
I was slinging it for that. All over the yard. The question is, should they do that more? I mean, especially with Maurice out, do you see a quarterback who needs to throw the ball more than 24 times?
Well, let's take Jeff out of the equation because he's a sling it first guy.
I will say this.
Always has been, John.
But you know what? When we had Vic Ketchman, and by the way, we got a chance to see Vic Ketchman. He's same old crusty Vic.
Happy. Rosy outlook on life.
When we had Vic on, and I thought he sent a good message out. And his message was that this year, and John, you talked about this at the very beginning before the season started, and that this year is not about wins and losses. This year is about finding out if you have the quarterback. And Vic reiterated that, and he said, you know, Jaguar fans, you know, don't worry about wins and losses. And I'm not telling people not worry about wins and losses because it is a bottom line business. You got to win. But at the end of the year, if all of a sudden you have a quarterback that you're getting excited about, that you realize that he is the future, that's what it's – I mean, that's the most important thing.
Well, let me just – and I'll go back to that in a second because I had a conversation this weekend with a coach, an NFL coach. But the issue of throwing around the yard, I think you still need to – you need to throw it. You need to see if he can do it. And especially if you can't run the ball. And right now we can't run the ball. We are not an effective running team. In
last four games have averaged 61 yards a game.
And for a number of different reasons we can talk about later in the show. But if you're going to run the ball that way, you might as well get in three wides and throw it around and allow Blaine, you know, 40 to 45 attempts a game and see what he can do.
I got a couple numbers for you here that are pretty interesting that are relevant to the three wides that I think are important when you evaluate a quarterback. And they are this. In three wide receiver sets this year, Blaine has completed 70.7% of his passes. Pretty good number, isn't it?
Very good.
And his yards per attempt get up to around 7 yards per attempt. That's his best number out of all the different packages.
Still not
that they
great,
run.
Though.
Still not great, yeah. Because in three wide receivers, you want to see eight, somewhere
nine,
in that range.
Yeah.
Well, nine would be pushing it because that'd be, you know, tops of the league.
Right. But you want more than seven.
And then two other numbers I think that are important. For, you know, because we're trying to, you want to evaluate Blaine Gabbert, right? Last year versus the blitz, give me a guess on what his rating was against the blitz last year.
Last year, having no idea, I would say
quarterback rating
47.
I was going to say between 45 and 50.
Johnny O,
all right,
63.9.
Okay, still not very good.
Take a guess what his rating is this year.
Only because you're saying it. Mm-hmm. My guess is in the 90s.
104.
105.7.
See, I was going to say 105.7.
Okay, here's another one. How many plays of 25-plus yards in 2011 did he have?
Zero.
He had nine total for the entire season.
It just felt like zero.
And he's got eight already this year. I mean, those are just some numbers that you point to and you say, hey, that's progress, right?
Well, how did you not leave the stadium thinking it was significant progress last week?
And I'll go the Yeah, but throw all Jeff's numbers and all that. Googly God.
Our numbers for losers. Don't tell me that line.
No, just Tony was told there'd be no math on this show.
I mean, just throw that. At some level, it's also the eye test of looking and watching the film and watching him play, and you know by what you saw that
this is a guy who
can play, and he took a step as far as his command of the offense and his ability to make throws. Listen. There are a lot of guys who can drop back and check it down. There's a lot of guys who can throw slants. There's a lot of guys who can, you know, throw hitch routes and a little fade here or there. There's those guys are out there. There are not a lot of guys in this league, and that's what and because they're hard to find, that can make some of the throws that he made on Sunday.
Well, and for the first time, if you consider the Oakland game, which he didn't play the whole game, but when he played before he got hurt, he looked really, really good.
Back-to-back performances probably maybe for the first time.
He looked like an NFL quarterback. The other day, he looked like an NFL quarterback. Frankly, in the first 19 starts of his career, there were glimpses where you went, okay, I see why they drafted him. There were those things. But there were never extended periods where you went, this guy is an NFL quarterback. And there's a long way to go because it wasn't a perfect performance. But I think everybody's optimistic because for the first time, you're seeing something that you think, if he does that again, then you've got something.
But aren't we talking, we're talking about he started 21 games to this point. I mean, isn't this about the time where we should be able to expect to see that kind of a performance? Isn't anything before that
is, but
a bonus?
Yes and no. It's
yes, but so many quarterbacks were doing it that you can understand why fans have been waiting and waiting, and frankly, why they're still skeptical, because you can still say it's only two. But we have to see it more.
Except that you talk about people last year, you talk about Cam Newton. Well, what's he done this year? You know, true. You talk about Mark Sanchez, right? You know, he had a very good team around him. They went to the playoffs a couple years in a row, and now everyone wonders in New York, you know, is he the guy or not?
Circumstances are huge in this league.
And let's just see what RG3 does over the course of this year and into next as to whether he can even stay healthy. I guess what I'm asking you is, based on all the years you guys have played and you've covered this league, is 21 starts in, isn't it fair to say right about now is perhaps, well, especially with all the crap that we saw happen to him last year?
I disagree.
But you got to put a little asterisk on it, because it's 21 starts, and it's a different staff and a different system,
guys,
within those 21
starts.
Yeah,
but here's the problem. What's fair, it does not matter in the NFL, because the reality is that every position, including the quarterback position, and it didn't used to be like this.
I was just about to say, the game hasn't changed so dramatically that a rookie quarterback today can come in and play as a star.
Yes, it has in this sense. The way they are evaluated today has changed.
Well, the evaluation.
I had this conversation with an NFL coach, and he said the tough thing now with the quarterback position, it used to be that you came in and you were given a number of years, and then you were evaluated whether you could do it today, whether you could do it or not. In today's NFL, because of the social media, talk radio, 24-hour sports, you are judged week to week.
But those are all external to the game. I'm talking about the game itself.
I'm telling you, the game.
Tony Boselli goes again, just like he did when he was a player, blaming media for everything.
No, I'm not blaming the media. I'm just saying the reality is these guys are evaluated week to week. And I'll give RG3 as an example. 3 weeks ago, it was RG's the greatest thing ever. Then he got concussed. And they said, you can't play with a quarterback who runs the ball like this. He's never going to make it. The next week, Brian, he came out and had a great game. And the word was, boy, if you want to be a successful quarterback, you have to have a guy who can move around.
I get all that.
But that's the evaluation. But that's what.
But what about a football evaluation? Just pure football.
I think what, you know, part of what you may be getting at is this. Blaine, a lot of these quarterbacks, because more teams are playing the quote-unquote pro-style offense in college, do come in more ready. That wasn't the case with Blaine, because he played a spread. So he was playing a drastically different offense last year, which...
You're wrong. More teams in college are playing the spread than pro-style offenses.
Well, they're coming in ready.
Than ever before.
Okay.
The reason why it's changed is because guys have come in recently and have had success early on at the quarterback position. But everybody is different.
Well, and I get what you're saying. I understand why people who listen to shows and watch the games and tweet and all of that, I get why they are so critical of Blaine, because they've seen other guys. I'm not saying that. I get that. What I'm asking is that a quarterback with 21 starts, almost two full seasons under his belt, isn't that, because it's the game now, not the social world, isn't that about when you'd expect to see a guy start to take a big step forward?
You don't know that, Brian, because it changes with each guy. It's not to say that's when it's going to happen. I mean, Andrew Luck has come out day one and has been very good. Whether Cam Newton's played well this year or not, he was very good last year.
He was good for about
He threw for 4,000 yards. I mean, whether you think that's good or not, he threw for 4,000 yards. Tannehill for the Dolphins has had some big games early in the first six games.
I thought we looked last week, he's had one big game.
No, he's had...
He's been over 200 more than Blaine had been.
But he's had...
But he had one 400-yard
game. He's had three games where his quarterback rating has been over 90.
Ignore the latest ones, because it didn't just happen within the last 2 years.
No, I'm just saying, exactly.
Look at the quarterbacks around the league. Ben Roethlisberger, obviously a perfect example, although goes into number one defense in the National Football League. That helps.
But he started Joe Flacco, playoff quarterback immediately.
Matt Ryan,
another guy who immediately had success. And so the reality is, and it the whether you want to call it the media or the fan or that perception affects decisions.
I think you're dealing with the elite quarterbacks there, and I'm just talking about young
quarterbacks. Everyone's looking at elite. I mean, that's what you're drafting.
Well, then maybe that's the evaluation issue. Maybe you don't go in saying elite quarterback. You have to rise to that standard.
But Brian,
when you're taking in the top 10,
you're taking the top 10, and when you were trying,
it's just a label.
No, it's not. When you're trying to win a Super Bowl and you want to win a championship, you have to have an elite quarterback. And if you don't have an elite quarterback, you need to go find them, because you're not going to win a Super Bowl.
How many are there in the National Football League today? How many are elite?
Elite, the guys who are going to win Super Bowls, maybe only 10. But you want to win? You want to be one of those guys?
I'd say there's 5.
Okay. Well, so that means 27 teams don't have elite quarterbacks.
And they're looking for them.
Okay. But does that mean that you have to draft them and proclaim them elite? Or can you develop them and find out if they're elite?
Both.
Or do you have to say, well, no, he's elite or he's not?
No, but my point is, I agree.
I just think you're playing to the media side.
No, I'm not playing to the media side. My whole point is, I've said all along, you cannot make a fair judgment of Blaine Gabbert until the entire body of work of this year. But the bottom line is the perception and the pressure of the fan base and the media affects football decisions. That's why you see guys make decisions quicker than ever.
It doesn't affect football decisions.
Don't back off on him, Brian.
It doesn't affect football decisions in places like Pittsburgh.
Because they got Ben Roethlisberger. Well, you don't have to make that decision, Brian.
No, forget if they have Ben Roethlisberger. They don't make decisions based on ticket sales or media or fan reaction. That's what I'm saying.
I'm talking about wins and losses.
They don't make football decisions.
They make it on wins and losses. Wins and losses.
Social media.
Wins and losses
in
places
like
Pittsburgh.
It does influence people's thinking.
Well, in places like Jacksonville, yeah, it probably does.
Don't try to smooth things over with them.
It influences thinking around the league.
We can't help it. We've reached the bottom of the hour. It's time for news, Joe.
Thank you, Brian. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. We'll do some news, pay some bills, traffic, weather, and more of Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Well, you could be driving a brand new Kia Optima by registering to win Conn's Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win, Brian.
All right, welcome back. We're live at Latitude 30 across from the Avenues Mall on US 1 and the Metro PCS call-in line, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Half hour in the quarterback's enough. Let's talk a little bit about the defense and what they've done the last couple of weeks. Clearly, having a rotation up front has helped the pass rush. They have 15 or 16 quarterback hurries in the last two games where they had, I think, 6 pressures in the losses to the Bengals and the Bears, and obviously 4 sacks. Having a bunch of guys rotating in is clearly helping.
Well, maybe more importantly, it's really helping the run defense, which is setting everything else up. George Selvey and Austin Lane.
Agreed.
You know, I didn't know George Selvey was this good a run player. And Austin Lane, I think we all knew, was a good run player, but hadn't been on the field enough to do it. Having those guys has certainly helped the run defense, which sets everything up on defense.
Yeah, that's why you've become a better pass-rushing defense, or you've been able to generate pressure the last 2 weeks, is because you have been better on those early downs to give you second and longs, third and longs. And that makes an offense clearly in a pass situation. There's no play action. You can do things differently on the back end and coverage. You know, so, yes, it is the play of the front, but it's not the play of the front that's just making it better as pass rushers, but it's the play of the front against the run. Because Austin Lane, I thought last week against Green Bay, was dominant against the run.
Now, I thought George Selvey was as well.
George Selvey was outstanding. Now, Austin Lane, you want to see a little bit more out of him as a pass rusher, but, you know, you've got other guys to do that. Johnny Chick gave you 13 snaps, and I think his attitude and his presence helped in a big way. And it's not that he got free, but Aaron Rodgers took notice. So here's some crazy white guy coming on my blind side that is like spitting and breathing fire, you know. And I think that helps, you know. So it's a nice mix. It's nice that they have depth. That's the first time this year that I think that they've only had 3 active defensive tackles.
So you think – you really think Aaron Rodgers took notice of John Chick rushing over there?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll move on.
He got under center and took a look over there at John Chick and said, ooh.
You're talking about MVP, Super Bowl winner, probably.
Nobody felt him push the pocket on the backside.
Future Hall of Famer was worried.
And he felt him.
And I like John Chick, and I think we're better with him out there. I'm not disparaging John Chick, but I just don't – I mean, the one thing this defense still needs to improve at – and you guys are right. The reason it was better because we were much better. I mean, I thought our run defense was outstanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I thought Austin Lane and George Selvey were the biggest reason for that.
Well, and it has been the last 2 games.
Yeah.
And for the first time, this defense looks a little bit like last year's defense.
But
which wasn't a great defense. It was a good defense last year, one that could keep you in games. And it's starting to look like that again because they're healthy up front.
But with that said, we still don't have a pass rusher who beats people one-on-one.
Right, but they didn't last year either.
I agree. I'm just saying.
And everybody early in the season, myself included, why in the world isn't this defense as good as last year's? Well, now that they're getting some guys back, it looks like relatively the same defense. You still need that guy you're talking about, but this one can at least function and keep you in games, which is what they could do last year.
Agreed.
You know the reason why they've gotten better is pass rushers? Jeremy Mincy said, communication.
You know, listen, I'm going to be careful because I played against a lot of defensive ends, and none of them can communicate worth a heck, but they were sure good pass rush. I mean, Michael McCrary wasn't talking to anybody, I promise you that, and Bruce Smith wasn't worried about anything else going on. They were just saying, I'm going to go kill the quarterback.
So. Mincy just cracks me up. I mean,
the communication, that's great. I mean,
Mincy said it must be true.
Some of the things that
Mincy
says is just funny.
I mean, the offensive line always has to communicate a lot. I didn't know you guys communicated that much, Jeff. I didn't really know you guys were talking. I mean, I know you might have said, hey, T.E. here. And I mean,
the world, according to Mintz, is a special place. Let's put it that way. I love it.
Yeah, that's right on the money there, Johnny O.
Couple of young guys that are playing a lot all of a sudden. Julian Stanford, not a lot. He played 17 snaps last week, but got his first.
He was the starter on first and second down. When they were in sub, he was off the field.
First career start, though.
Right. I'll say this. And, Jeff, I'm sure you remember it. I think it was the first or second play of the game. They ran lead right at him, and Julian Stanford read it immediately, went in, met the fullback in the hole, stuffed him with the correct shoulder, keep his inside shoulder, keep his outside shoulder arm free, and rocked the fullback where there was nowhere to go for the running back. I said, that's how you play lead.
I think it was a blitz.
Was it?
Yeah, but I mean, the play that impressed me the most was it was a swing pass to number 20, and I'm drawing a blank on
Green.
His name now.
Alex Green.
And the Packers, Brian, were going from right to left,
okay,
on a radio dial. And a swing pass to the right to Alex Green, and all of a sudden he catches it, and you have – cornerback on the outside, I think it was Mike Harris. Julian Stanford takes on the blocker, and then Paul Posluszny was coming inside out. And Stanford attacked it, knew he had inside and outside help, attacked the lineman, threw him aside, and comes off and makes the tackle. That's what's good. You know, linebackers today.
That's called winning.
The linebackers of today have to be able to make those kind of plays in the open field. That play makes Julian Stanford more special than going up into a hole and plugging a fullback and then making a play. I'm not discounting it.
I understand what you're saying.
But it's harder to find the guy that can stay in the open field and come off a block and make a play in the open field than it is a Tommy McManus who's just going to ram his head in there and
that
stuff
is a
somebody.
Shot, right?
No, because Tommy was very good at it, and Tommy was a great role player. I mean, that's perfect for what we asked him to do.
How about Mike Harris, since you mentioned him? 44, 45 snaps last week?
I mean,
you see anything there?
You know, it surprised me in that ball game because I was expecting, obviously, with no Rasheen and no Derek Cox, my thought process was because Mike Harris against Oakland played nickel when they went to their dime package against Oakland, that he would be asked, Mike Harris would play the nickel role again. No, they let Mike Harris, he played left corner. Aaron Ross played on the slot as the nickel, and Mike Harris played very well. Now, look. They didn't have a couple of their horses, and this week might be a total different story with Megatron and Titus Young. But still,
I'll tell you what my thought was.
I don't care who it is, he played well.
My thought when I looked out there and Derek Cox and Rasheen Mathis weren't out there, my thought was they're in trouble. And I don't care who was playing wide receiver for the Packers, the fact that Aaron Rodgers was out there and the secondary held up and they held that offense to under 200 yards. We've all seen really, really good quarterbacks, like Aaron Rodgers is, do a lot with very limited receivers. The Jaguars didn't let him do that, so the credit has to go to the secondary. They covered outstanding no matter who they were covering.
And let's not forget Mike Harris. This is a rookie, six-round
right.
draft pick. I mean, who we had discussions before cut day, would he make the team
right.
or not, and he is.
He didn't show all that much in the
preseason.
Well,
we had the argument, and I said he'll make it. Jeff said, I don't think he's ready for it.
So this is back to Tony's right.
No, because Jeff's been right on a number of things as well. It's just the point is that's how close it was, a disagreement where we agreed probably on 50 of the 53 men.
Right.
He was one of the guys you wondered about, and he has come out when called upon and played very good football. I mean, he's a guy that you look and say, okay, if Derek Cox can just stay healthy, please. We can talk about that later. But you get a young guy like Mike Harris, and you get him in the sixth round. That's value. That's a guy you can grow with, who can maybe move into that nickel and maybe one day even be one of your starting corners.
In order to build a roster, you have to have guys who you really don't expect, and you don't expect a guy who was drafted where Mike was to come along and be a starter, frontline player. But you need a couple of those guys over a 3 or 4 year period to pan out, and it looks like he has that chance.
You know, if I told you last week that the Jaguars would play with Mike Harris and Will Middleton as their starting corners, and they'd have Chris Brzezinski at safety and Julian Stanford at linebacker, and the Packers would have 238 yards of offense.
Right.
And 186 for the passing game. Right, right.
No matter who was on the field other than Aaron Rodgers, because the point is, the great quarterbacks, which he is,
still have found a way.
Usually find a way. Nobody would have surprised you, even knowing that all their receivers were out, if they had rolled up 420 yards.
Guys, I mean, listen, let me ask you this question. Let's be honest. Even if you'd had Derek Cox and Rasheen Mathis out there, would any of you taken the bet that Aaron Rodgers was not going to throw for 300 yards?
No, because he had done it for so many weeks in a row.
I would have thought he would have thrown for at least 200.
I'm not trying to be, I mean,
no, it's a point well made.
I mean, he was going to.
And he didn't throw for 200.
I thought he was going to carve us up.
Well, season low 186 for him, season low 238 for the Packers. And I guess the big picture is the defense played well with guys who aren't normally in there. I want to hit one more before we move on, and that's Chris Brzezinski, who's made his second straight start, played every snap. You know, we're talking about young players now. People are evaluating Gene Smith. You know, is this a guy who can go forward? And I'm not saying every down starter, but can he be a role player for
you? I think
is he any good?
I think Chris Brzezinski is a guy who can be your third or fourth safety. He's a good role player. And if someone gets hurt, he can go in there and start at center field.
I kind of agree. And, you know, give him credit, because 2 weeks ago when I tweeted out that he was starting, the fans were, you know, jumping off bridge. They thought it was going to be a disaster. And he has not been a disaster. He's been serviceable back there. He's done his job. He hadn't gotten him beat. So, you know, credit to him.
I think the nice thing about what they've asked him to do has been right up his alley. Against Oakland, when they played a lot of DeJuan Landry up near the line of scrimmage, Chris was able to play center field. This past week against Green Bay, when they had the safety up, again it was DeJuan Landry, and then Chris stayed back center field. He played back in cover two, DeJuan did as well. But just to make it simple, I think he's done well as that center fielder. His tackling, which was a major concern, has been very good since he has been put into the lineup. He had one bad play, in my mind, at Green Bay. I thought he should have made the pick. He went up and put one hand up, and I think if
you said on the time, go put two up and take the ball.
You know, he had
time. The ball was in the air a long time.
You know, he had time to make that play. If that's – I know when I watched it on the film –
That was the throw to Jermichael Finley.
When I watched it on the film, first thing I thought of, does Ed Reed make that play?
Absolutely.
Whoa. I mean, Ed Reed is the best safety in the last
– I know that.
2 decades to play football.
I know that. I'm just saying is that – but I mean
– since Paul Krause.
If, you know –
I mean, really? Can we get somewhere in between?
That'd be fine.
But it was a makeable play.
But he was
play.
Capable. You know, and he had enough time to do that. He's got to make that play.
We're going to remember this as the day that Jeff said Chris Brzezinski didn't measure up to Ed Reed.
I mean, my goodness. In my opinion, right now, Chris Brzezinski, a guy who you drafted, I believe, in the sixth or seventh round last year out of Wyoming.
He's no Ed Reed.
He was not Ed Reed. He was a fifth round pick.
Is a guy who's your, in best case scenario, fourth safety. You're fine if he's your third safety. And he's a guy that fills out your roster, who has speed, straight line speed, is a special teams player, and you need guys like Chris Brzezinski to win football.
All right, we need a break. Joe, get
all
us
right,
out of
Brian.
Here.
Sunny gets you ready for game day with two great deals. Game Day Wings, 40 wings with their new dry rubber, sweet or mild sauce for just $19.99. And Sonny's Tailgate Package, a feast for 4 to 6 people with choice of barbecue pork, beef, chicken, or ribs, 3 sidekicks, garlic bread or cornbread, 4 soft drinks, or fresh fruit iced tea for just $39.99. Takeout only. Sonny is the first name in barbecue. Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, rolls on live from Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Now you can pick up your Denny's Playmaker card at participating Denny's locations and learn how you can win a Mega Jaguars fan experience at the December 23rd home game. There is no purchase necessary. No purchase necessary to check out Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30.
All right, Joe, thanks so much. Again, the Metro PCS call-in line, 800-355-NFL1. I don't know why I bother giving that, because, you know, I can't get you guys to slow down for 1 second, let alone to work a caller in. But if you'd like to try to get in between these guys here, give it to us. 800-355-6351. At Tony Baselli. At John Ocean. Let me throw this at you. In the second hour, we're going to talk a lot about the Lions. I want to talk about special teams, obviously, but before we do that, did you see Steve Spurrier's comment?
Do we have to? Never mind.
Well, okay, then you've done it. You've already given the opinion. Did you see Steve Spurrier's comment? I'll paraphrase it. It was that Alabama could compete in the National Football League.
It was idiotic.
It's silly.
I'll just say this.
Why would you say that?
Because it's idiotic. Because it's stupid. You're just trying to – you're not thinking.
That's from Southeastern Conference.
It's dumb.
Loyalists who believe what he's saying.
I don't care. Go get your best, you know, best 22 from all the Southeastern teams and go give yourself 3 weeks to practice. You're not beating a bunch of grown men.
That's right. Been proven before.
I mean, it's a bunch of grown men that do it for a living, that are stronger, are more physical, and are better at their craft because they've been doing it longer.
I'd expect a fan, like the guy out here in the front row, to absolutely embrace that idea.
Listen, here's all you have to know.
Steve Spurrier?
All you have to know, Steve Spurrier was a disaster at the Redskins.
I'm just pointing it out.
And so he was a disaster. Great college coach.
I'm sure what I love the guy.
I do too.
I do. I love him.
You've got to do is stand on a college sideline one day.
You got a bunch of 18-year-olds.
And stand on an NFL sideline the next day. And hear the collision.
It's not even close. It's like
a different game.
It's like you've me saying
it's a different game.
I've done both. I call both. It's not even close. You can. I'll go get.
If you took a poll, Tony, of how many NFL players there are in the league, how many guys do you think, once you've experienced the NFL, truly believed that even the best college football team, or even the best 22 players in college football, could truly go compete in the NFL?
No, it's. Listen,
no players believe that.
None. I remember the first time you just step on the practice field.
Right.
And going out there.
And looking at me.
I can understand that.
I had
a lot of confidence once I saw Jeff out there, but looking at some of the other guys. No, but you get out there and it's like, whoa. This happens a step quicker than. And
everyone's bigger.
Everyone's bigger and everyone's stronger, and there was. I'll never forget, first pass rush, one-on-one pass rush after me, just working him over Jeff in with no pads on.
Is that the one where he wrecked your knee?
No, God, that was a cheap shot. We don't want to get into that.
Again.
But it was the first day when there's pads on. And in all seriousness, I was fine. I had no problem blocking anyone with no pads on, you know, because athletically. And we put the pads on in the first pass rush. Jeff lined up outside, got a little bit wider, and decided he was going to make a point that this was not like – college and decided to bull rush me, and I was
this
like,
"This is Washington State."
And he hit me, and I was like, "Oh, this is a little more difficult." I mean, and trying to sit, you know, stop a power move in the NFL is much different than trying to stop a power move in college.
And a buddy of mine believes that Alabama would win games.
He's ignorant.
I've told him this. All you got to do is look at a guy like Andre Branch, who was what, the 30th player taken in the draft.
I'll get better than that. What about Upshaw for for the Alabama, the great
Courtney
Alabama
Upshaw.
Courtney Upshaw, unbelievable.
Right.
And he couldn't even get on the field, and the only reason he got on the field now is because of injury. He wasn't even good enough to play, and he was the
star.
And
probably will be in a couple of years.
But
a lot of these guys, we always talk about how it takes time to develop. It just takes time to. We spend way too much time.
But I wanted to kill a couple minutes.
This is idiotic.
Good job.
The importance of that.
I like Spurrier for that
I
reason.
I love Spurrier.
I like Steve too. He's a great college coach, but I mean,
he's fun.
It's ignorant.
Yeah, I've got some friends in Charleston. I was up there not long ago, and they're all Gamecock fans, and they said we hated him when he was in Florida. And I said, now they said
love
we
him.
Absolutely love.
Oh, if he's your coach, you love him. Unless you're the Redskins.
He's not my coach, and I love him.
But. I guess he was just needling somebody.
He needled me. No,
here's the important question: Does South Carolina have Alabama on the schedule, or would that be only an SEC title game?
I don't know.
Only so a title game.
So he's, of course, he's
they're out of the title game. Unless Georgia and Florida both lose.
All right. This all is right. not a college football show.
Well, I'm just, you guys brought it up. And I like.
I know you were college and pro because you stated that.
I was making it.
It isn't supposed to be easy, is it, Tony? It's not. It's not easy, folks.
My whole point is I respect Steve Spurrier as a college coach, one of the greatest college coaches ever. Right. And he is fun to watch. And I
and
like,
that team is really good.
It's a really good, good college and I football like him. Team. But for him to say something that ridiculous is an ignorant statement to me. Or he's just trying to needle people just to get them to react. Probably the second.
And you reacted.
And I did. He wins. And Steve, you win.
Joe, now you win, baby.
There you go. Thank you. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. Well, the 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealers today. Proud sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hour two of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, is coming up next here on Jaguars Radio.
And welcome back. Hour number two now of Jaguars This Week, live at Latitude 30, Jacksonville Southside. It is the hottest spot out there, folks. The food is unbelievable. There's so much to do. Come on by and see us. We are in Latitude Live this evening. And we're here, of course, until 8 o'clock. It's right across from the Avenues Mall. And by the way, away game Sundays, and there aren't many of those. Well, there have been a couple this month, but there's not many coming up in the next few Sundays. But this is the official away game headquarters of the Jaguars. Jacksonville and the cheerleaders are here. It's party on Sundays, so come on down and enjoy Latitude 30. And by the way,
I had something new tonight.
What'd you have?
I had a bacon cheeseburger.
And nachos.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're getting peach cobbler.
Yeah. And ice cream.
You're fat.
Thank you. But the nachos were good as always. I backed the steak off of the nachos this week, though. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Why?
Just, you know, because I knew I was thinking about that bacon cheeseburger.
Oh, it's so much better.
I'm glad
you're really taking care of yourself.
Backed off just like, you notice I didn't finish my fries. But you know how the bread was so good on the sliders? Bread was just as good on the bacon cheeseburger.
Well, he went California tonight. He was eating turkey burgers and guacamole.
No avocado. That's a little fruit. All right. I'm on a weight loss mission.
And we're glad that you're doing so.
Good for you.
All right, the Metro piece.
It's long overdue. I'm working on a rap there. You said, good for you. It's long overdue.
Thank you.
What's the next slide? Come on, Johnny, work with me.
I got nothing.
Shocking.
By the way, before you read this liner here, because this was a seminal moment? Not like Florida State.
We have seminal. No sure, so why don't you tell
a
us?
Seminal moment. Okay, I just probably pronounce it like Seminole.
Right.
Today, let me ask everybody else in here, okay? Does anybody know what The Power of the Schwartz is and what movie it comes from?
Yes.
Raise your hand if you know what Power of the Schwartz.
Spaceballs.
All right, we got
the Schwartz.
50%.
May the Schwartz be with you.
Spaceballs.
My two cohorts on Jaguars This Week, Johnny Osher, from the fame of Jaguars.com Ozone.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
And J.P. Shadrick.
They had no idea.
J.P. Roll Tide Shadrick. Okay.
This was inside the Jaguars.
Hang on. I'll go one better for you with this man right here.
Johnny O.
Last night on Jaguars Reporters, we talked about Spaceballs because we talked about Star Wars, which he doesn't like.
Doesn't like.
Okay.
No interest.
You actually talked?
What?
How do you not like Star Wars?
Yes, I did.
So my point but today during Jaguars, what is it called, JP? Jaguar, Inside the Jaguars. It's a daily magazine.
I'm glad you
Jaguars.com. I just want to make sure I got
it
right.
It's not called Jeff's Movie Review.
I was confusing it with Film Room Friday.
Is it Jeff's show now?
At Jaguars.com every Friday. So anyway, I bring up, talking about the Detroit Lions, and I bring up the Power of the Schwartz.
Right. May the Schwartz be with you.
I thought you were just talking about Jim Schwartz.
It went right over the heads of JP Roll Tide Shadrick. And Johnny Ozone Osher.
When do we do Jeff's movie reviews on Jaguars.com?
Well, we did it today. We were talking about...
I'm just saying.
Spaceheads? Is that what it is? Spaceheads?
Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. All right, folks. The
come
Metro
on,
PCS call in line as I try to steer
That's
this
a
show
come on, man, moment.
Back into the deep water is 800-355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. The Metro PCS call in line.
Even the football, the dumb jock over here knew it.
I'm sure he did.
How did I become the dumb jock?
Well, we.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, all of a sudden.
We, but he.
I know, because you're a genius.
We,
right? I mean.
We, he, that kind of thing. All right. The Detroit Lions roll in here on Sunday with a guy that really it's almost hard to describe him, to compare him to anybody, Calvin Johnson, Megatron. His numbers are down in terms of touchdowns this year, and so everybody in Detroit is saying, you know, what's the story here?
Because it gets doubled every play. Anything inside the red zone, he is doubled. To the point, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when they played the Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles lined up Nnamdi Asuwa in a safety, or their, one of their nickels, whatever, one of the other defense backs, on the line of scrimmage like Calvin Johnson, Megatron was a gunner. And just doubled them on the line and said, we'll play the other nine against your 10, and we're going to take him out of the play.
Which is probably pretty smart.
And it worked. And they struggled to score in the red zone. And if you watch the Detroit Lions play, doing their games and watching a bunch of the tape, every team that has had success this year has played cover two, two deep safeties. The Vikings, when they beat them, played cover two 98% of the time and basically said, if you want to run the ball, we're going to play seven in the box. Go ahead and try to. The Lions are an awful running team. Their offensive line is not very good. They're not good at the point of the attack.
At running the ball.
At running the ball. They're decent pass blockers, but not good at running the ball. They're not good at the point of attack. They don't have a dynamic back. And teams have played them with safeties over the top, specifically the Calvin Johnson side, and have said, if you want to throw the ball at 5 to 8 yard chunks and take 8 to 13 plays to get down the field and score, God bless you, and we're going to play that type of football.
I'll disagree with one point. I think they're really good pass blocking offensive.
That's what I just said. They're good pass blocking. Okay. They're not very good. They're awful at run blocking.
Yeah.
And at the point of attack, they are.
But you know that's a mindset, because they just don't want to. They don't care about doing it. I mean, that's just the way they play offense.
I don't know, Jeff, because Jeff Backus is very up there in his age, and he is not a powerful individual anymore, I don't think. Dominic Raiola, the center, is up there in age. He is not a great run blocker, and he used to be.
But they don't. They believe that they're going to throw the ball to win.
Yeah, but I think it's an issue because they know that teams are playing cover two, and when you watch some of the tape, they try to run the ball, and they still can't.
I pulled a couple number, or just did a couple calculations, and it doesn't require genius to do this. But if you take Matt Stafford's rushes, assuming that they are pass attempts that he just
because they are, there's no designed run.
No, and then you take his attempts, and then you get a percentage on pass calls versus runs. That offense is 68.8% Matt Stafford passing game.
They sling it all over the yard.
They're throwing it all over the yard. And I mean, that's got to be the highest number.
Well, and the problem, part of the problem they have is they have Megatron. Their other receiver, their number two, was Nate Burleson before he got hurt. They had expected more out of Titus Young this year.
He was good last week.
He was good.
They targeted him 9 times and he made 9 catches.
He was good last week and he was outstanding at the end of last year, where he came on as they thought the number two threat. He had been hampered with a knee that he's missed a lot of practice time. So coming into last week, he had struggled, and I think maybe the loss of Nate Burleson allowed him to kind of move up there. But they are a team, probably more than any other team, Jeff, at least that I've seen, that depend on two guys more than anyone else. I mean, it is about Calvin Johnson and Matthew Stafford.
Well, primarily, yes.
Pettigrew is a good player, but he gets
there
lost.
You go.
He gets lost. Tony Scheffler is a good player, the other tight end.
Yeah.
But I mean, but I'm saying, but for
he's fallen off then, because when we saw him in Denver a few years ago,
he was really good.
But he's for a number two tight end, he's still very. I mean, if that's your number two, you're doing pretty good. But for whatever reason, they have not gotten into the rhythm. And now they scored more points last week, but if you look at their numbers, they're number two in offensive as far as yardage, but their scoring offense is not very good.
And it shows, because they're 3-14 that
second-rated offense, ninth-rated defense, and they're 3-4 because they are a team that makes a lot of errors.
And they're 3-4, and they're in trouble. I mean, they were 2-4 last week before they beat Seattle. But
very undisciplined defense.
Yeah, and this is not a team that can afford to lose this week.
No.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll take a closer look at that front four on the defensive side of the ball. Mike Mularkey told me on Monday night that they are ferocious. And we'll get Jeff and Tony's thoughts, John as well. Jaguars this week. Joe.
All right, Brian. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. You'll know more and get better about the Jaguars with Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Well, you can join Blaine Gabbert, captain of the third annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk and 1 mile fun run on November 10th at Everbank Field to support the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation. You can register as a team for only $15 per person. You can do so at mckenziesrun.org. Brian?
Are you running, Joe?
I can. You know, I think about it.
You should.
I think I will.
I'll be there.
You're going to run, or are you just going to
I start.
It's a 5K, right?
It's a 5K. It's a great run. If you remember the run for the last 2 years, Blake Wilson and his family have done an amazing job at building this foundation.
Yeah, they've raised a lot of money. They do a lot of good things.
Triumph from tragedy. So, folks, I mean, if you're a runner, if you just want to come and enjoy a great day at the stadium, they've done a phenomenal job. You finish on the field at the stadium, and you feel really good about yourself when you understand what the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation is doing around the world. They just opened a girls' orphanage in Uganda last year. So, I mean, this is a group of people that's doing great things, and just wanted to chime in there and say, if you think
about it. What is a 5K? 3 miles?
3.2.
3.1.
And that's so 3.1, so
yeah,
that's
right. 6.2 is a 10K. Yeah.
12 laps around the track?
Basically.
No way.
Give or take.
No way.
No, we know you're not doing it.
No.
I'm not either, by the way.
No, couldn't do it.
I could walk it. It'd take a while.
I could train for 6 months.
Oh, you could do 3 miles.
Yeah, you could. I've done it. You could do it.
Your knees
do
it?
Maybe not your knees.
You can do it?
I can.
Oh, yeah, then I can do it.
You could do it. You just wake up the next morning and pay for it.
Oh, buddy.
Right. All right, let's talk about the defensive front. Cliff Averill, Clay High, Kyle Van Den Bosch, a guy, Logs, I know you think a lot about.
Not anymore.
And Ndamukong Suh and Corey Williams. And then Nick Fairley is behind him. So they've got some horses up front. What do you say about their defensive front?
I say that Kyle Van Den Bosch is slowing down.
He's done.
I don't know if he's done, but he's slowing down. He's got almost three sacks. What, 2.5 or 3.5?
He still has a great motor, but he has no more pop. You don't have to worry about his bull rush. If you match his energy, you're going to block him.
Yep. And
I mean, just match his energy.
But he's still got something left because, you know, there's not everybody can match his energy, like you say.
That just drives me crazy that you can't. I mean, that's just showing up and doing
see,
it.
See, that's the old left tackle
talking.
I mean,
it just drives me crazy. How could you not match someone's energy?
That's
block
the
him.
Old left tackle talking right there.
Oh, my God. Type A buddy over here. He's got it.
Just match your – I mean
– But I still like him just because he's got a great motor and he plays hard. Cliff Averill, I like Cliff Averill. I think Cliff Averill should be the right end.
I think he's a little bit overrated.
He is a little overrated, but he should be.
He's a good player.
It doesn't help that Cliff Averill is playing left end. Cliff Averill is a right end.
I'd run right at him.
He's athletic. He can move. He should be where Van Den Bosch is.
I agree with that.
And then they should find a left end. But the two
guys.
But
he's a good player. Cliff Averill is a good pass rusher.
What do you have, 12 sacks last year?
Yes, he's a good,
good player.
franchise player
for them.
He's a good pass rusher.
But the heart of their defense lies in the middle.
Yeah.
That's Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, and
Corey Williams,
the three big guys. And Fairley's not even starting. Williams is the other starter.
But don't you think Fairley's playing after a very tough rookie year where he underachieved? At least what I've
he's
seen.
He's playing well.
I think he's playing pretty dang well. I think he's actually more impactful than Corey Williams. Maybe not as consistent. But he has those explosion plays where he gets off the ball and makes it very difficult to block him.
Yeah, and I think he'd probably be a starter if he didn't have the off-field screw-ups and issues, and so they're probably holding him back because of that.
Can Ndamukong Suh be what Albert Haynesworth was in Schwartz's defense?
Well, and he really is, you know, because that's an aggressive attacking defense. They like to bring pressure. They like to be aggressive with their ends, and you can do that. If you've got some guys in the middle that can play well. Now,
he's not as dominant as Albert
Ndamukong Suh is not playing where Albert Haynesworth was at.
No.
When Albert was playing, he had 2 years back-to-back.
He was unblockable.
He was the best defensive player that I had seen in 40 years in the NFL,
whoa,
30 years.
Whoa.
I was an avid NFL
him and J.J. Watt.
Better than Reggie White.
You, no, you, but you he was right back, up there.
Oh,
No, he was not.
No, no. If you look at
Jeff, you were seriously out of your mind.
Look, before you lose your control here,
I'm losing control. If you think that Albert Haynesworth at any point of his career was as good as Reggie White,
I think in the 2 years that Albert was playing at a very high level, would match.
No,
but the big difference is obviously Albert didn't do it for more than but those 2 years.
I hesitate to say this, but you know, Jeff said that to me on a Monday night television show. What was that? Would it have been 07, 08, in that range?
And he was wrong then, too.
Well, no, you said
no, I wasn't wrong.
And the next night, I was taping Jack Del Rio's television show, and we were doing a film segment. And Del Rio said, now look here. He said, I've been around the National Football League, you know, and watched it since 1970. He goes, I don't know if I've ever seen a defensive player that is as dominant as this guy.
Well, you must have forgotten Reggie White.
Well, there you go, Jeff, you and Jack.
Yeah, I mean. He must have forgotten.
Well, but it was in the span of about 48 hours. I heard that from two people.
But Reggie White, was unblockable for about 10 years. I mean, this guy was.
I know, but so Albert Haynesworth for 2 years when they played was unblockable.
Well, don't say he was better than.
Don't overreact like you did with J.J. White. No, he's not a great player.
I didn't say that. You said he was the best defensive five technique of the 3-4 ever.
Ever.
That's what you said.
I did not say that.
Yes, you did.
In his defense, it's looking pretty good for him right
now.
No,
he's not.
J.J. Watt?
I didn't say ever.
He said ever.
I said ever.
One of the most talented.
No, that's not what you said.
All I know is J.J.
Watt's
story.
The tape.
J.J. Watt's the story
kinda,
of that Texas team.
Kind of hard to argue with.
He's an MVP candidate right now.
Oh, great, really but there's hard. A different story every year. I mean, you guys are... I mean, you yelled at me earlier.
I'm not putting him in a Hall of Fame, Tony.
You yelled at me about the media being emotional. You can't listen. You guys are the same way. You live in the now. You forget what these guys have done. Yes, you do. If you think that J.J. Watt's the best five technique.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say that because I never played in a five technique. What I'm saying is that J.J. Watt right now
is good.
Is making a case
good.
For being one of the better
dominant player.
3-4 defensive ends, and if he keeps playing like that,
okay, he's
we'll
dominant,
talk
but I also watch Marshall Yanda pretty much block him. One-on-one and did a pretty dang good job.
We're back to this argument
I don't
now.
Think I've ever seen anyone block Reggie White for an entire game by themselves.
So to get back to Ndamukong Suh.
Right.
Before Tiny.
Are you saying that we're off on a tangent
before
here?
Before Tiny Tony Boselli.
I'm sorry for yelling at you.
Sidetracked the conversation.
I don't know where
again.
We, how we got here. But
it's the show.
I think he's good, but he's not to that Albert Haynesworth good.
Right.
And I think he can be blocked. But he's one of those guys that's capable of taking over a game.
I agree with that 100%.
You know, and I think it's going to be a great matchup between Uche and Ndamukong Suh because
is that how it's going to be, or is it going to be
Ndamukong Suh is a left defensive tackle. That's all he plays. He doesn't flop sides.
No, he's just there.
He's a left defensive tackle.
They're left and right. They're left and right. Two
kind of like Marcus Stroud, John Henderson. Marcus was left. John was right.
They play an even front. They don't play any under overs. They don't play. They don't rarely.
People at home are going, "What's even under?" Well,
they don't line up a guy on the center.
Every now and again, you'll see Ndamukong Suh line up as a left end when they go to pass rush. Every now and again, but for the most part, he is a left defensive tackle, and Uche Nwaneri will have to block him all day.
And how's that going to go?
I think Uche's capable. I think Uche's a good player. Now, is Uche playing to the level he played at last year? Probably not, but he's capable of blocking him. You know, I think it's a great matchup. I think that's, you know, there's not many sexy offensive line, defensive line matchups, but when you have Ndamukong Suh coming to town and going against one of the guys that for the last couple of years has probably been one of your most consistent players, I think that's a great matchup.
I was working at the TV station when Suh came here for the Gator Bowl in January of 2009. Nebraska played Clemson, and I had heard about him, but I had not really watched him. And that day,
he
tore up Clemson's entire offensive line.
Yeah, he was unblockable in college.
You know, where I first saw that ability.
The one thing that I think that has hurt Ndamukong Suh is that when he came into the league and when he came out of college, he was clearly just a dominant physical guy. And so when he came into the league, a lot of the guys had to adjust to understand what kind of a player he was and how he played the game. And playing in National Football League, this is a perfect example going back to Steve Spurrier's comments. And Ndamukong Suh has really not gotten a lot better from that rookie year because he hasn't learned other things besides
power.
I am power and that's what I am. If he would learn some other things to accentuate and add to his game, he would continue to elevate. But what Ndamukong Suh is, he came in here and he stayed right there. He has not jumped the level of his play. But now,
he's still good.
Let me correct myself. I mean, where he's at,
just so everyone,
really good.
We're on radio, Jeff's holding his hands hand above very high. High.
But you sort of expected, I mean, your point is you expected him to be more dominant by now. And he's not an absolute dominant player right now.
No, he's very, very, very good.
He's a dominant player.
But you can block him.
He's not Reggie White.
Or
he's
J.J.
Watt in the five technique.
Or Ed Reed.
And Albert Haynesworth in those couple years stretch. Or Ed Reed. Yes. But
to Jeff's point, he is one of the top defensive tackles in football. And he is a violent individual. And so as an offensive line, he's one guy you do not want touching your quarterback because he will try to inflict pain on Blaine if he gets to him.
That's one of my biggest – you know, when I'm thinking this
week – There's
a line
for your rap, by the way, Pain and Blaine.
Pain and Blaine.
I'll have to add that to my rap.
That's the one. You're on your way.
But this week, you know, when I'm thinking of Ndamukong Suh versus Uche Nwaneri, the one thing you do not want to see is what you saw Ndamukong Suh do to Jay Cutler.
He'll try to break
in
half.
Monday night. I mean, he did the leg sweep and then the body slam on Jay Cutler.
He plays with an angry edge.
And
which is
you
good.
Just you were holding
for well-adjusted people.
You were holding your breath for Jay Cutler, and you've got a quarterback who's got some left non-throwing shoulder issues, you know, and took a couple good shots at Green Bay, but none of them shots were anything like what Ndamukong Suh can bring.
Yeah, I tell Mike Brewster, you better have a good game and block one-on-one quite a bit because we're going to be sliding – Ndamukong Suh, or
well, Brewster would have to block fairly now. So
no, I understand, but if I'm choosing who gets to, I mean, Ndamukong is a better player, and or the other thing that I think you have to look at this week, you're going to have to tell your tackles, guys, you're going to have to be big boys now and block one-on-one, and we are going to run our backs through the B gaps and chip the defensive tackles. And you listen, someone's got to block one-on-one. I mean, you can't help everybody. And you got to look at the tackles and say, guys, the matchup is we got to block. You got to go block Cliff Avril by yourself, and you got to go block Kyle VandenBosch by yourself. And we're going to help the inside guys this week.
All right, time for news at the bottom of the hour, Joe.
All right, Brian. Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss Watches are available at Allen Jewelers in Jacksonville, the Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. One more half hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today.
All right, Joe, thanks so much. Hey, let's go to the Metro PCS call-in line. James is in San Diego, but is coming to his first Jaguars game this weekend. James, welcome to the show. What's going on tonight? James is gone. All right.
Maybe his flight left.
Yeah, he was sitting at the airport. Comedy, ladies and gentlemen, from the stage, live.
Oh, he's back. He's back.
All right. All right, James, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Never better. Just ask Tony.
I'm outstanding.
I'm coming out to Jacksonville for my first ever Jags game this week, so I thought I'd call in. I'm a long-time listener.
Outstanding. Bring a victory with you. How about that?
I just want to tell a quick story about how I became a Jags fan.
All right.
I was actually I'm born and raised in Utah, and so most everybody around there is Denver fans. And so, you know, back in 96, when I was a strapping 8-year-old boy, you know, everybody was rooting for the Broncos in the AFC Championship game. So what did I do? I had to be the different guy. So I was like, you know what? I'll root for the Jags. You know, since then, I just have always paid attention to the Jags, and it kind of just began as a time filler. And you know, the more that I've listened and learned about the game, you know, I've just fallen in love with the Jags, and I'm really super excited to get out here this weekend.
So you found great value in being the contrarian.
Hey,
there you go.
You're dang right.
Absolutely. Hey, we love it. We love having.
You know, James, I was expecting a story like, you know, I went to the game and I watched number 71, that guy Tony Boselli, and watched the way he played, and just. I said, I want to be like Tony, and became a Jaguars fan because of that. Come on, James, you got to embellish a little bit.
Or just lie. I mean, can you tell that story again and say what Jeff just said? I'd feel really good about it.
And you know, it's a shame because back then I had no idea that I was watching such a graceful man. You know, and now reflecting back on it, you know, it's a shame that I was so young and I didn't understand what I was watching.
Well, we are just glad that you are a Jaguar fan. And have you been to Jacksonville before?
No, we kind of just did it on a whim. We were like, you know what?
Come to Latitude 30.
We're going to go hit up a Jags game. So my girlfriend and I booked some tickets, and we're flying out Friday, and we'll have a day there, and then go to the game on Sunday, and then we're
well, enjoy yourself.
What's up?
Before you get off, stay on the line because I want Linda to get your information.
Oh, okay.
For a Jaguars fan coming to his first Jaguars game,
we can do a little something special.
We
for
need
him.
To do something special.
Absolutely, I agree. I think
for James
the same
coming
absolutely.
All the way from San Diego.
Absolutely.
So, Joe, make sure Linda gets all his information. We'll make sure he gets hooked
James,
up.
James, don't hang up.
Yeah, don't hang up, James.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Love you guys.
All right. See you, man.
There you go.
That's awesome.
That's a great story.
It is.
Now everyone's going to call and say, hey, I was a Jaguars fan, and my first jersey was 56.
And I really liked Jeff Wagaman.
He inspired me. To be
but,
great.
But you know what, though? What, that, right. what that's a perfect example of is that when you win, mm-hmm. and you, all of a sudden you have fans.
You get a lot more fans when you win.
Than fans that grow up with it. I mean, that's what it's all about. Yeah. You know, that's what it takes to build that following.
I do have to tell
winning is better than losing.
I do have to tell the story.
Thank you, John, for chiming in. Great insight.
Great insight.
That's why he is the insider. The ozone.
That broadcast school really paid off.
Yeah.
Now, what movie is that?
What What's that?
That broadcast school really paid off.
That is from
Dodgeball. It's Spaceheads.
Major League.
Oh, Bob Uecker. Yeah, that's right, Bob Uecker.
He says to his guy, 30 fans? And he goes, that's all we've got? And the guy goes, yep. He goes, well, that broadcast school really paid off.
And I was actually quoting Bull Durham when Eddie Calvin-Lelouch says, you know, winning, man, it's like better than losing.
A couple of baseball moves. Now, I got to tell the 56 story. On Sunday, there's a guy with a custom 56 jersey in the stands.
In a sweet jersey.
It was real.
I mean, like
it was
game type
it was one
jersey.
Of the originals.
It was Bill Loggeman, Jeff Loggeman's brother.
No, and everybody was like, yeah, right, look, 56, here, this is cool. And I said, watch, it's probably Kyle Bosworth. I was wrong. It was Hardy Nickerson.
The 56,
here's
as we
really,
know.
Here's the really
and how did we find out?
He turned around and showed us.
You know, he's all the way down at the very front row. You know, during pregame warm-up. I said, hey, that 56 jersey, is that a Nickerson on the back? Because that's the first thing that popped in my mind, because I see Nickerson jerseys every night. And he says, yep. You're like, dang it.
The lesson is humility comes to us all.
It sure does.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. If you would like to join us on the Metro PCS call-in line. Am I getting that right tonight, Joe? First night that we've read the card. Metro PCS call-in line. We are live at Latitude 30, and we invite you to join us on the line. We've got 5-6 minutes here before we take our next break and then come back and look around the National Football League. Is there anything we're forgetting?
Mike Thomas, the trade. What does it mean this week?
Well, he dropped what would have been a sure touchdown pass.
I don't think it means anything.
Well, it means they got value for somebody who really was losing his role.
Here's the other thing.
Which makes it a good deal at this time of the year.
The other thing that it means is that now there's only one wide receiver from last year left.
That's a great point. Cecil Shorts.
Yeah, and he's
really
good.
And he's playing the best of any of the receivers.
And it makes, you know, it's a little bit risky because it does make you pretty thin. I mean, if one receiver goes down.
Well, they claim to go off of waivers today.
But I think they actually, right, I think they believe that Kevin Elliott's better than Mike Thomas.
I think that Kevin Elliott
certainly has a chance to be.
Has a chance to develop into a real butt kicking physical wide receiver.
I agree.
And you need clearly you need in these last 10 games to get him on the field, to get him to where next season he knows what he's doing.
You know what's interesting, and I'm not, and everyone relax before you think I'm comparing the two.
Oh, I know right where you're going here.
But in 1996,
oh no, I do.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy named Andre Rison who was the starter and was playing, and they cut him for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons was a guy that no one knew about and had no clue was a special team player named Jimmy Smith that they felt like needed to get on the field and get more reps because as the third receiver, he was doing some nice things. They cut Andre. Jimmy Smith becomes a starter. You saw what he did.
Turned out all right.
He did the rest of that season. huge games in the Denver game that plays in the Denver game that James was just talking about and ended up being the best receiver for this franchise and for a period of time the best receiver.
Right. So you're saying, and by the end of that year, he was – I mean, if you look back, Keenan McCardell made the Pro Bowl that year.
But Jimmy was the better player.
But by the end of the year – I think Jimmy, if he didn't have more yards, it was close, and he was clearly the go-to guy.
He was the better player.
Had a big touchdown against Buffalo, and, I mean, he was the reason – he was a big reason that you guys got
and
the championship
so my
game.
Point is with Kevin Elliott, and I'm not saying he's going to become Jimmy Smith or anything like, but sometimes when
– Same reason.
You get a guy
– Ed Reed?
You move
– is Ed Reed? Is that what that is now all of a sudden? Kevin Elliott's Jimmy Smith?
That's good. No, you move Mike Thomas out, who's not Andre Rison either.
Right. No, I know.
You move him out. And now all of a sudden there's more reps and you get a young guy who you think can progress and become a active participant on this team in Kevin Elliott, some more playing time.
And boy, it leaves you, you know, not that Mike Thomas was a grizzled veteran, but it leaves you very, very young at that spot.
By the way, do you remember the Jimmy Smith game in Denver that really, where we first saw that he could play?
Yeah, returned, 1995, he returned a kick for a touchdown.
And he blocked a punt for a touchdown, yep. And he caught a touchdown pass. He had three touchdowns in that game that John Elway was so good.
I remember. We got killed.
Yeah, well, because John Elway was throwing 50-yard passes, you know, falling away to his left, you know, with his right arm. So
he was really good game.
Yeah, he was really.
And he was really good a lot of games.
He had Anthony Miller.
Yeah, I know, but that game, I really remember it.
He was really good.
We just couldn't do anything.
Nothing that day.
Defensively.
Jim is in Mandarin on the Metro PCS call-in line.
He had a great pass rush.
All the coverage.
You almost got him.
The pass rush was great.
You were right there the whole time.
Jim, are you there?
Yes, yes, thanks. Guys, appreciate
the
show. Appreciate your time. One real quick question. Why, after playing football, when you get drafted and you get on the field as a professional, why does it take so long after playing for 10, 12, 15 years, does it take so long to learn the speed of the game? It seems like it takes another 2 or 3 years for these guys to get into a system.
Are you talking about the jump from college to pros?
Yes.
Is that because the guys in the pros are
totally
really good.
Different?
Because the guys in the pros are really good. In college, you might play. I'll just say, as an offensive tackle, when I was in college playing defensive ends, you might play 3 or 4 guys that will play in the NFL, and maybe one that's gonna be really good.
And the playbook.
In the playbooks,
way limited,
much easier. And then you get in the NFL, and you realize that every weekend you were playing somebody that would have been the best player you played last year.
You know, a funny description to me is that when I played in college football, our defensive coordinator Frank Spaziani, who you know was head coach of Boston College, and we never played. We didn't have a nickel.
I remember when they said we came in here and they were talking about protections. This is our sub protection. Yeah. Like, what sub?
We didn't have it. In college, we didn't have a nickel.
I didn't even know what it was.
We didn't have a dime. We played 2 coverages and had maybe a blitz coverage, so maybe 3 coverages. And in the pro game, defensively, you play base, heavy, goal line. Sometimes you have one that's not quite. It's a short yardage package. So that's 3 right there. Then you get nickel, dime. Am I missing any, Tony? I mean, so you're playing.
Well, then you get zone blitzes. You get odd front,
you
even
play 3
front.
Fronts. You may play 7 different styles of defense, and then you could play probably 20 different coverages.
Yeah. So it's mentally harder, and then everyone is that much faster.
Yes,
and that much better, and so it is,
and stronger,
and more mature,
everything.
I mean, everything. So I can remember coming in, and some guys have more success in certain positions. A lot of times. If you're a good offensive lineman, you can make the transition.
If you're a good running back, you can do it because it's all instinct.
Here's the other thing.
A good linebacker can make the transition.
In college, you're looking at...
Very few other positions, though. Sorry, Jeff.
In college, you're looking at a 4-year window of the best players. Because I remember when I came to the NFL, and one of the first New York Jet player I met, his name was Dan Alexander. Dan was 36 years old at the time, 37 years old. He was old enough to be my dad. Because I was 21. I mean, he was honestly old enough to be my dad.
He'd been really young, but yeah.
But, I mean, if you
I don't want to say what state.
If you think about it in those terms, I mean, you have a 36-year-old man who came out of college 14 years ago and is still playing among the best in the world. And think of, and Johnny brought this point, think of how many first-round draft picks get drafted in the NFL
And you know immediately they ain't going to make it.
30% of them don't make it past 3 years.
And don't kid yourself, when it's your job and you have guys that are making, trying to make teams, have families. I mean, there's a, it's a different.
Yeah, so you got,
it's different.
You got
it's a different game.
Age variation from, you know, not counting kickers, you know,
they don't really
and not counting Jackie Slater and Matthews, who was a freak.
Darryl Green.
And Darryl Green, who played for 20 years or whatever. Well, I mean, so you've got basically a 15-year window of age and the best of the best in 15 years. That's
it's
a lot
amazing.
Of talent.
With all that you've
that's
just
a
said.
That's a lot of talent.
That's a lot of talent.
With all that you've just said, that Alabama team can still compete.
They oh, easy. As long as Spurrier's the coach.
All right.
But I'd time. Like to see it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would settle it once and for all. Let's take our final break. We'll come back and go around the league with these guys and take a look at some of the games this weekend, Joe.
Well, the Jaguars rewards program is now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Gas Redemption Program, but it's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com, click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards. Today, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio.
All right, it's been a strange show this evening, folks. So let's try to end with a little normalcy. And that's going around the National Football League and getting opinions. You know, I almost think we ought to keep score just because you guys are so competitive. And because tonight it's been
let's
Tony's right, Jeff's right,
let's
Tony's
do it
right,
because,
Jeff's right,
because
Tony's
you know what,
right,
I was,
Jeff's right.
I was right so much last week and Tony won't admit it. Let's start keeping track.
Humility. Fine, you want to keep track, let's do it. Go. Who's going to keep track, though?
Humility.
Joe, keep track.
Allie's going to keep track.
Joe, write them down.
Can you keep a track in your mind? Really? This ought to be fun.
This would be great.
This would be really good. Are you blonde? Just curious.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. I'm a little uncomfortable right now.
I am very uncomfortable. That's harassment. Call HR.
Right. Yeah, right. Kansas City, San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah, Kansas City's terrible.
Who's supposed to play quarterback for the Chiefs, by the way? That's Thursday night game.
No, they've already said that it's Castle.
It's Castle.
How
okay.
about Romeo? Did you see the interview where Romeo Crennel was asked about why Jamal Charles only had 4 carries, their best player?
That's a good question.
And he goes, he only had 4 carries? He said, and then he goes, I guess he said something like, someone told me, that Peyton Hillis was running the ball well. Coach, you only had 5 carries.
That's great. Can't make it up.
Denver at Cincinnati.
Denver.
Hmm.
Since he's lost 3 in a row, haven't they?
Yeah, they've
it's a must win. They're coming off a bye. But I still think
at
Denver
Cincinnati?
Wins.
Yeah.
At Cincy.
I'm taking Cincinnati.
Take it.
You got that
Peyton
one, Allie? Allie, are you paying attention?
She got it.
Well, then how are you going to keep this?
Joe, write this down. Joe, write it down.
Oh, she didn't know we're doing it right now.
And my question was inaccurate?
Wow.
Baltimore-Cleveland.
Baltimore,
but... Yeah, Baltimore.
Baltimore's going to have a bye. They'll win.
Yeah, Baltimore, because I think they've been embarrassed by their play.
Arizona at Green Bay.
Oh.
Green Bay.
Chicago at Tennessee.
Chicago.
Yeah, well, you know, Chicago, I didn't think that defense could play that well, that consistently, and boy, they are really good. They are really good.
They're a dangerous team in the NFC.
Yes, they are.
Here you go. Miami at Indianapolis. 2-4-3 teams.
I'm going with Miami.
Miami.
Why?
I've seen Miami a couple times
this year.
They're
tough.
I think they're pretty good. That defense is really good.
They're a tough.
And as good as the Colts are, and the Colts are good, they've been winning close games. They've been pulling stuff out.
Miami
seems to be winning big.
Miami has 3 Pro Bowl defensive linemen. Cameron Wake. Paul Soliai at nose guard is just a mountain of a man. And Randy Starks right now is playing at a very high level at the defensive tackle
position. And let me just mention one other name for the Miami Dolphins. They may have the best center in football.
Mike Pouncey. Maurice is his brother.
Marquise?
Marquise is his brother. It's Mike Pouncey is the center in Miami. He's better than his brother.
Yes. He is... I think the best, he is the best center in football.
And he is nasty.
Nasty, strong, quick. He's got
nasty.
It all.
Carolina at Washington.
Washington. Carolina's not very good.
Yeah, I'll go Washington.
I'll go RG3.
Buffalo at Houston.
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 Those poor
so
Buffalo
far we've only, So far we've only disagreed on one.
Which is Cincinnati. Cincinnati
Here's one you'll disagree game. On. Minnesota at Seattle.
I'm doing that game.
Nah, Seattle wins that big.
I get to go to Seattle.
So you can't pick it.
And I'll pick Seattle.
Okay.
Would you take Johnny Minnesota?
Well, Seattle at home is really,
yeah,
really
Seattle's
good.
Not losing at home.
Nah, Seattle. I mean, Seattle plays real good defense, and Ponder's got a noodle for an arm.
The Pittsburgh, the viciousness with which you vicious. Hate Christian Ponder.
I like the guy. I like the way he handles himself.
He hates Christian Ponder as much as he loves J.J. Watt.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I like the way he's mobile, really good. But the guy can't throw the ball 15 yards down the field on a rope.
Steelers at Giants.
Giants.
That's
Giants.
A great one, though.
Giants.
That's a really good one. I'm taking Pittsburgh.
Oh, good. That's two I'm going to win on you.
And that's in New York, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, Dallas, I'm going to take Pittsburgh.
Dallas is at Atlanta, the only undefeated team in the league.
I bet Dallas wins that game.
I bet you Dallas does, too.
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I bet they win that game.
No chance.
They have to win the game.
Smitty.
That's three.
Here you go.
Now, because Atlanta's going to lose. I mean, Atlanta's
not
going long term.
They're not going 16-0.
16-0 kind of team.
If the Cowboys win, Jerry Jones is proclaiming Super Bowl bound, boys.
Only if it's in his building. Philadelphia at New Orleans Monday night.
New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans wins that. Philly's a mess.
So is New Orleans.
Yeah, they got Joe Vitt.
2-5.
I told you Joe Vitt was making a big difference. That was the funniest story to me all week.
Everyone
was talking about Joe Vitt's bad. I'm like, who cares? He's right. I mean, nothing against Joe Vitt, but he's your linebacker coach.
Yeah.
He's the intern coach.
Joe Vitt's bad.
I don't know. I'll go with New Orleans.
Win with Vitt.
You want the last word tonight, Loggy?
Albert Hainsworth.
No? All right. Good night, everybody.